It's time for another exciting edition of the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. Stay tuned as we discuss local and national sports from Southeast Missouri and beyond. And now, without further ado, let's get on with the show. And welcome back to another exciting edition of the Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle. This is our first broadcast or podcast of 2025.
Happy New Year!
I'm Mike Bueller.
I'm Mark Sanders.
And Kyle will not be joining us today, but we are hoping to have him back next week. We have got a full show today. We're going to be talking a lot of football, college, and professional. We're also going to be talking about the recently completed Bloomfield Christmas Tournament and maybe another thing or two. But before we get going, I want to announce that Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle is brought to you by Royal Retros, where you can get the coolest throwback jerseys you can imagine. If you use the code SPORTSDESK, all one word, when you order, you can get a little discount on your jersey. And without further ado, Mark, let's talk National Football League.
Yeah, we are only focusing on games with playoff implications, and we know who the teams are likely to be. In fact, we know six out of seven teams in the AFC, as well as the NFC. So what's at stake is seeding and who gets in. For the AFC, the only spot in question is the seventh seed wild card. And that is the team that is going to have to go to Buffalo and play during wild card weekend. So here are the games and the way the different scenarios break out. Kansas City will be traveling to Denver. Denver must win this game. Now, they're not out of it if they lose, and Kansas City is resting everybody. But Kansas City's backup quarterback is Carson Wentz, and Carson Wentz could probably be a starter. Well, he could definitely be a starter for the Tennessee Titans. I mean, they don't even have a professional quarterback on the roster. So, it's going to be easy to pick Denver, and that with KC resting all of their starters, but you just never know about that. I lean toward Denver in this game. Denver can still get in if Cincinnati and Miami both lose. Now, Cincinnati has a tough game to play. They have to travel to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh would love to eliminate their divisional rivals with a win. Miami, however, is traveling to the New York Jets. Now, this is not a guaranteed win for Miami because it is winter in New York City. And so New Jersey, which is where they actually play, is going to be cold and breezy this weekend. So Miami does not play well in the cold weather. So Denver is in with a win. That's the easiest one. And if Cincinnati and Miami both lose, Denver is in even if they lose. Now, looking at our other two wild card scenarios, Cincinnati has to go on the road and win at Pittsburgh.
Never easy.
But Pittsburgh has, they've lost really tough games in the past few weeks to both Baltimore and Kansas City. So Cincinnati's going to be a challenge for them. Now, Cincinnati needs a win, and they need a Denver loss and a Miami loss. So Cincinnati does not control their own destiny. They need help from both Kansas City and the Jets. And good luck getting help from the Jets. like I already said, Miami gets in with a win and a Denver loss. So Denver has the easiest path. Win and you're in. Cincinnati and Miami both need Denver to lose. And then Cincinnati also needs a Miami loss. So if you're ranking probabilities for that seventh wildcard spot, it's Denver, Miami second, Cincinnati third. Now, stranger things have happened. So tune in on Sunday. Now, let's look at Baltimore and Pittsburgh. Baltimore is hosting Cleveland, and a win will clinch the AFC North for them. That should be a fairly easy task, but again, it's the NFL, and anything can happen. Now, if Cleveland upsets Baltimore and Pittsburgh wins, then Pittsburgh will take the AFC North title and Baltimore will be relegated to that wild card spot. And I'm not sure about the seedings. I think it depends somewhat on what the Chargers do. There may be some tie-breaking scenarios where if both Baltimore and Pittsburgh both lose and the Chargers win, they may get a higher seed. But regardless of that, the situation in the AFC North is somewhat similar to the NFC North, which, of course, we're going to talk a lot about today here in just a little bit, where the team that wins the division gets to play their first game at home. Of course, they won't have the first round bye. That belongs to Kansas City and home field throughout. But that wild card game at home can be really important. So lots of playoff implications in those four games in the AFC. Now, in the NFC, there are only three games that mean anything. Carolina travels to Atlanta, and Atlanta will win the NFC South with a win and a Tampa Bay loss. Tampa Bay is hosting New Orleans. Now, they should crush the Saints. So Tampa Bay wins, they win, and they are in. Now, when we look at seedings, the Rams, who are already in, if the Rams beat the Seahawks, then they win the NFC West, and they secure the number three seed. And it doesn't matter at that point what Tampa does. Tampa ends up as the fourth seed. Now, if, let's say, Tampa wins and the Rams lose, then Tampa will jump up to the three seed, and the Rams would drop down to the four seed. Now, this is meaningful because the loser of Minnesota at Detroit will be the fifth seed. And the fifth seed will play the fourth seed. So when you're thinking about, okay, where would you rather travel to? Would you rather travel to Atlanta or Tampa or the Rams in Los Angeles? Obviously, I think everyone would want to play in Atlanta against a rookie quarterback who will be starting his third game this Sunday. And that is, of course, Michael Penix Jr. So let's go on now and take a look at Minnesota at Detroit. There's literally no way to overhype this game. I mean, you really can't do it. It is the first game since Dallas played the New York Giants on the road in 1993 that will determine the number one seed in the conference. If you're too young to remember 1993, that was the first of Dallas's that was the beginning of Dallas's Super Bowl run with Jimmy Johnson as coach and Troy Aikman. Dallas went on the road and beat the Giants and ended up the number one seed and went to the Super Bowl that year. So maybe that bodes well for Minnesota. Whoever wins this game will be the number one seed in the NFC. They'll get that first round bye. The loser has to go on the road the following week in the wild card game. I thought about this. I looked back at the past. For those of you who are wondering, how old is Sanders? I was born in 1968. My first year as a Vikings fan was 1976. That was the last year that they went to the Super Bowl, losing to John Madden's Oakland Raiders team.
That's right.
In that Super Bowl in January of 1977. This is, in my estimation, the biggest regular season game in the history of the Vikings franchise. I didn't look up how they clinched the first round bye in 1998, but that team was an offensive juggernaut. Randall Cunningham was at quarterback, and he was throwing bombs to Randy Moss and Chris Carter. That team was 15-1, and I think they had the number one seed locked up well before the end of the season. The other thing to consider is that Detroit has been the darlings of the NFL media since preseason. Most people, myself included, had Detroit picked to go to the Super Bowl out of the NFC. Of course, they have fallen into quite a number of injuries, especially on the defensive side, and this really opens the door for the Vikings to go in and possibly pull the big upset. Now, I said in last week's podcast that if the Vikings were able to beat Green Bay, that they would go on to beat Detroit and get that number one seed. And I'm sticking with that. I'm not going to bury the lead. I'm going to pick the Vikings to win this game. But I need to warn everyone, as Vikings fans, have a defibrillator handy. Have some oxygen. Have some nitroglycerin. This is going to be an up-and-down game. We're going to be down by at least two scores in the first half and the second half. I'm absolutely convinced of that. Now, two scores is 9 points, you know, but 9, 10, 12, 13, maybe even two touchdowns, we're going to be down. That's just the way that this game is going to go. It's going to be like an old-school 15-round heavyweight fight. So I am picking Minnesota to win barely, and hopefully their rookie place kicker will regain his confidence before Sunday night, because it may rest on his leg. I am going to say this.
We have a big announcement, folks.
Oh, I'm almost there. I'm not quite there. Okay. It's number five on this, and I'm on number three. The winner of this game is going to the Super Bowl.
I believe that.
Yeah, the winner of this game is going to the Super Bowl. It's not really a bold prediction, because the winner of this game has to win two games at home to get to the Super Bowl. I mean, that's really the path that we're talking about. And I still consider Detroit to be the best team in the NFC. So if Detroit is playing at home, they're going to the Super Bowl. But Minnesota has a considerable home field advantage at U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis. So it may very well be that the loser of this game loses in the wild card round, especially if that's the Vikings, because looking at either one of our likely prospects going to Tampa Bay, Tampa Bay has a really dynamic offense. So do the Chargers. So do the Rams. You know, Minnesota's only lost to two teams this season, Detroit and the Rams. I think we might be able to beat Tampa Bay, but, you know, they have been scoring a lot of points on offense lately. So I'm not going to say either one of those games scares me, because I do believe that Minnesota is for real either the second or third best team in the NFC, depending on what you think about Philadelphia. But I do think that the disappointment of losing this Sunday and then having to go on the road for a wild card game, I think it would be really difficult to get that done. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying it's a much harder path. And we could say the same thing for Detroit, because Detroit was thinking weeks ago, we're the number one seed. This is going to be easy, you know. And finding themselves on the road as a wild card after the very last week of the season, that could be very discouraging. I'm also going to hedge my bet and say alternatively that the NFC champions will come from the NFC North, whether it's Minnesota or Detroit or even Green Bay. Again, I think all three of the playoff teams from the North are better than anyone else. It mainly comes down to matchups and who's at home and who's on the road. And
now we have a big announcement,
yes,
folks.
Yes, now we have the big announcement. If Minnesota wins the Super Bowl this year, I'm getting the Vikings logo tattooed on my arm.
You heard it here first, folks.
Yes, and again, I am not a tattoo guy. I've never even come close to it, but I figure, you know, a big, bold prediction is needed here to tilt the luck in the face of the football gods and get us over the hump. Of course, nothing in football is ever guaranteed, but we haven't really talked seriously about the Vikings being a Super Bowl team since the Brett Favre year of 2009.
And
before that, it was 1998. And of course, you know, we fell flat in the championship game in 1998. The refs were on the Saints' payroll in 2009. you know, they should have been charged with a hate crime for what they did to Brett Favre that day. Really, it was brutal. It was really brutal.
Speaking of brutal, before we got to college football, we're going to talk about a team on the other end of the spectrum, my beloved Tennessee Titans. While Mark's Vikings are competing for a chance to win a championship, my guys are competing for a chance to get the number one pick in the draft. And we're not that far from it. If we lose Sunday to the Texans, we are guaranteed to draft no lower than second. And that's a good possibility, because not only have I heard that the Texans are going to play their starters, we are playing our at least third string running back. Tony Pollard and Tyjae Spears are both hurt. So there is a good chance we're going to lose this game. But if the New England Patriots do us a favor and beat the Buffalo Bills, which is a good possibility because I have a feeling the Bills are going to rest their starters, we get the number one pick in the draft and we'll be able to say by Sunday afternoon that the Tennessee Titans are on the clock.
You know what I would do? Well, maybe with the number one pick, you take, tell me his name, the guy from Colorado who plays on both sides of the football.
Travis Hunter,
yeah. You take Travis Hunter with the number one pick, obviously. You do that. But if things don't go your way and you end up with the second or the third pick, I would not waste that pick on either Shedeur Sanders or any other quarterback that's coming out. I would look for a quarterback in free agency and trade down a few spots to get more picks, because
that could work.
You need a lot more players. You know, you're not one player is not going to come in and make the difference unless it's Travis Hunter. You know, otherwise I would trade that pick. I really would.
I could see that the last time we had the number one pick, we traded it, and that pick was traded to the Rams, who took Jared Goff. A little bit of interesting trivia. There's a lot of guys we could get if we don't draft number one. If we take a quarterback, I would say Shedeur Sanders before Cam Ward. I'm not that enamored of either one of them, frankly. I'm not quite ready to give up on Will Levis yet. Now, the management might be, but if you look at the NFL, one thing that's been seen a lot the last few years, teams are giving up on quarterbacks way too quick. The New York Jets have had a really bad habit of that. That's one reason the Jets are in the horrible shape they're in. They gave up too quick on Geno Smith, who has become a really solid starter with Seattle Seahawks. They gave up too quick on Sam Darnold, who has the Vikings possibly on the verge of going to the Super Bowl. We may need to give Will Levis a little more time, get a little bit more of a line in front of him, and get him some more weapons.
Yeah, and I think what the Vikings organization has shown everybody, and also to a certain extent, you can look at Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan, is that you really need these offensive gurus to bring up your quarterback, to teach your quarterback how to play. One of the unsung heroes of the Viking season this year has been former journeyman quarterback Josh McCown, who was actually Sam's backup with the Jets. But McCown has come in and he has done a superb job of just being there for Sam all along the way and helping to teach and reinforce what KOC has been, you know, training him up to do. So it really has been a team effort. And I don't know if everyone saw this. You can go on YouTube and see it. There's just this wonderful moment after Sam Darnold comes in and his teammates are cheering for him and they're spraying water all over him. They lift him up on his shoulders. They switch to another camera angle and you see Kevin O'Connell just kind of leaning up against the lockers, and he's watching all this play out, and he's got this smile on his face, like, yeah, this is what I've been building here. You know, it really, that's, I don't know how to explain it. It feels, as a Vikings fan, it doesn't feel as inevitable as 1998 felt. I mean, we certainly do have the greatest wide receiver in the game right now in Justin Jefferson, the same way that we did back then with Randy Moss. But I can't really put my finger on it right now. I'll think about it more if we win on Sunday night against Detroit about what is different about this team. But I have to tell you, I usually don't watch Vikings games. They're too stressful for me. My blood pressure gets way too high, very literally watching the games. But I watched most of the game against Green Bay. I bailed for a little bit after Sam threw that interception in the fourth quarter. But I watched most of that game, and I'm planning, unless Detroit really just runs us right out of the building, I'm planning on watching this game on Sunday, because I have confidence that the Vikings can win. I really do. And that's different for me.
Yes, it is. I mean, I've heard all of your stories about, you know, the sufferings of being a Vikings fan. Our friend Jeremy Nall said the same thing. So it is going to be very, very interesting to watch. We're switching gears now to college football. There's been a lot going on. Three of the four playoff spots are decided, and the fourth game will probably be going on right about the time this podcast is on the air. So I'm going to let you take that away.
Okay, yeah, that'll be the Notre Dame Georgia game at the Sugar Bowl in New Orleans. And, of course, that was postponed due to the terrible outbreak of violence that our country is just continuously plagued with. I mean, we couldn't even get through one day of a new year without a mass killing situation. This is a sports podcast and not a political podcast. Sports is an escape and a refuge from all of the violence in the world. But I think I speak for everybody in saying enough is enough.
Ugly stuff.
Whatever it is that we can do to reduce the level of anger and violence in this country, just so that we can all come together for a New Year's celebration or a football game and not constantly be in fear for our safety or our lives. There has to be some way for us to figure out how to do this. So,
agreed.
Enough said about that. So the winner of this afternoon's game between Notre Dame and Georgia will take on Penn State in the semifinals. The other semifinal has already been decided, with Texas winning an overtime thriller against Arizona State. And I watched most of that game. Really exciting at the end. It looked like Texas was going to run away with that game, and they probably should have. They really just let their guard down and let Arizona State back into that game. They were a much better team than Arizona State. And thinking of Arizona State as being in the Big 12 is just bizarre for
yes,
me.
It's just
too strange. Ohio State came out and just put a whooping on Oregon. I mean, Ohio State played Oregon like Oregon owed them money. it was like that scene in Goodfellas where Robert De Niro takes the phone cord around the neck of the guy who's selling wigs and says, "Where's my money? Give me my money." And he's just choking this guy to death. And that's what Ohio did to Oregon. Oregon did not look like the number one ranked team in the nation. They looked like a JV school playing the varsity. I mean, that game was over by the end of the first quarter. I may have underestimated Ohio State this year. They look really good. And if you had to ask me, out of the five teams remaining, you hand me a $20 bill and you force me to bet on which one of these four teams is going to win the natty, I'm putting my money on the Buckeyes. And I hate to say that. Although I won't have any problem rooting for Ohio State against Texas, because I absolutely despise Texas. Yeah, very difficult for me to ever root for UT. I also don't like Penn State. I mean, they might win, but I don't like them. So whether it's Notre Dame or Georgia, I will be rooting against Penn State. Now, in thinking about this first 12-team playoff, obviously we haven't had really what you could call upsets. I guess Ohio State beating Oregon is numerically an upset, since Ohio State was seeded eighth and Oregon was seeded first. Penn State was the sixth seed in beating Boise State, who was the third, and then Texas was the five, beating fourth-seeded Arizona State. But those seedings were really done by the fact that conference champions got the automatic buys. This was something that was set up ahead of time. So if you look at the teams that are still in it, if you just look at the seedings objectively, these are the numbers: 2, 5, 6, 7, and 8. And if Notre Dame beats Georgia, you know, we'll have 5 against 8 and 6 against 7. And you think, well, that's not really chalk, is it? You know, that's not the top seeded teams. But then you look at the names of the teams: Texas, Ohio State, Penn State, Georgia. You know, you have once again SEC versus the Big Ten, which is what it usually looks like every year. And maybe the problem, and of course my friend Tuck would absolutely agree with me on this, maybe the problem is the rankings. Maybe the problem is the mostly old men who are looking at these teams, and whether they're actually looking at their body of work, or maybe they're not. Maybe they're not looking at the win-loss records or the strength of schedules. Maybe they're just looking at the name of the team.
And I can see that.
Yeah, and coming up with these rankings. And this was just a crazy thought. What about artificial intelligence? What about programming and AI to look at all of these different statistical variables and look at the historical performance of the various teams to come out with it? I don't know enough about computers or AI to be able to say what that would look like. I don't think that it could possibly be any worse than what the committee is doing. Of course, I'm sure the committee would object to that. It's like, you know, you can't just let a machine do it. I think letting a machine do it and seeing at least what it looks like, even if you don't use the machine statistics, I think using an AI computer and seeing what they can come up with might be something worth considering, as long as they don't put Alabama in when they're undeserving, as they proved to be in losing to a not nearly as great as they were last year Michigan team in their bowl game. So for those of you who routinely root against Alabama, enjoy it while you can, because Calvin DeBoer is going to have his first full recruiting class next year. So I think Bama's going to be right back in the national championship conversation next season.
It's going to be interesting. So who do you think's going to win it all
this year?
Yeah.
Yeah. My pick's going to be Ohio State. As much as it pains me to say that, I would really like to see a Georgia. I think Georgia against Ohio State would probably be the most entertaining game. But we'll have to see if Georgia can get past Notre Dame today. We'll have to see what they look like.
It's going to be interesting. We're going to switch gears now. Mark, you were at the Bloomfield Christmas Tournament earlier this week for Championship Night and got to see two really, really, really awesome games for third place and the championship. I'm going to let you talk about that.
Yeah, it was really extraordinary. I'm sure that many of our local listeners are familiar with this, but this was the 68th annual Bloomfield Christmas Tournament, and it really was just a fantastic weekend of basketball. The consolation bracket, the ones who participate in the consolation bracket are the ones who lose in the first round, and then you have to win the rest of your way out just to claim seventh place. And one of our area teams, the Twin Rivers Royals, beat the host Bloomfield Wildcats for the consolation game. So pretty decisively, too. Twin Rivers has a good squad, and I think they're going to be very competitive when it comes around to our district competition at the end of the season. The fifth place game was Risco over Richland. The Risco Tigers are a really talented team. They have a senior in Sammy Smith and a junior in Owen Fortner, both of whom are just extraordinary players. They can both slam dunk when they get the opportunity. They can both hit outside shots. They're tall. They're strong in the paint. Risco is a really impressive team, and I think they're going to do well in their districts as well. They beat the Richland Rebels to claim fifth plays. And then the two final games of the night, the Bernie Mules beating the East Prairie Eagles in overtime. And what an exciting game that was.
Yes.
Bernie was, I believe, the fourth seed, and East Prairie was the second seed. So, yeah, that game went into overtime. And then the championship game also went into overtime. The Puxco Indians beating the cross-county rival Dexter Bearcats.
And that was that may go down as one of the best Bloomfield Christmas Tournament championship games of all time.
Well, certainly, you know, in recent memory, absolutely. Puxco was down by 13 points at one point in the second half, and they just kept cutting into Dexter's lead. They held a three-point lead with time remaining, and one of their players missed a free throw that would have sealed the game with a four-point lead. Instead, they missed the free throw. Dexter got it down into their own end and then hit the game-tying three in overtime. But Puxico grabbed the lead right off. They took the jump ball and immediately laid it in for a layup, and their defense kept Dexter off of the scoreboard for the most part throughout most of overtime. And the real key for that, Dexter had to foul late in overtime, and Puxico was making their shots when it counted. And so, yeah, 64-60 in favor of the Puxco Indians, and the place was completely packed out. It was,
oh, yes.
It was standing room only. It felt like it was about 80 degrees inside the gym on a cold night in December. Really, really exciting. I also like the dynamic there with these two Stoddard County teams. Everyone who was from Dexter was there rooting from Dexter, and everyone who was from everywhere else seemed to be rooting for Puxico. So,
oh, yes.
That was a fun little Stoddard County dynamic. But, you know, other than just the quality of the basketball, one of the things that I want to praise the players and the coaches and the schools about is the sportsmanship that was demonstrated after every game. You know, it's like these games were hard fought, competitive, but when a player would go down, even after a hard foul, an opponent would be just as likely as a teammate to lend a hand and get them to stand back up. Every time the game ended, regardless of the outcome, the teams, of course, it's customary for them to shake hands, but it was more than just that. You could tell these were young men who knew each other and supported each other, even though they were from different towns. You know, the coaches were genuinely supportive of each other, and I think that's one of the things that we see that's still present in small town America is that kind of sportsmanship and camaraderie. And it's easy in these days and times to feel jaded about the way that the world is. And, you know, these teenage basketball players gave me a little bit of hope that things may just turn out all right in the long run.
Good deal. I'm glad to hear that. I was at the Papyrus Showdown for the first round and for championship day. Vashon was in that tournament, and Vashon lived up to their number one ranking in Class 4 and won that tournament with ease. I think they won all of their games by double digits, including beating the Poplar Bluff Mules by 53 points in the championship game, which I think is a record for the biggest win in a championship game in the Showdown. And it's not a disrespect on Poplar Bluff. That Vashon team is loaded with Division I talent. It is loaded with tradition. Poplar Bluff just ran into a better team.
Yeah, yeah. It's a shame, though, that you know, that the championship game has to be that much of a mismatch. You know, it's, of course, a lot of it just does come down to talent, and Vashon has always had a much larger talent pool to draw from there in the St. Louis area. But I certainly hope that the Mules will be able to bounce back in spite of that and continue to work toward having a successful season here in 2025.
Agreed. Oh, and one more thing. The Lady Mules took fourth at the Lady Royals Christmas Classic on Saturday evening, you know, came close to winning that game against Neelyville. And while I know that Coach Sully Dugas and her team would have liked to have finished a little higher. That's a nice showing for a Lady Mules team that has already matched its win total from last season.
And let me guess, who won that tournament? A little team from Donovan, perhaps?
The Donovan Donettes won that tournament, and as expected, they won all four games in that tournament going away.
Yeah, and I believe they are once again undefeated on the season.
That is right.
They should have, I don't have the schedule in front of me, but they should have a matchup with the team that beat them in the playoffs last year, Notre Dame out of Cape Girardeau, and I believe that game is this month in January. I can't remember if it's memory comes and goes in your 50s. I have found out, but I think it's either the 7th or the 21st. I believe
I can pull that up real quick on my phone. I believe that game is at Notre Dame in Cape Girardeau, which is going to make it all the more interesting. Let me see here, as my phone's taking its sweet time to load it. Let me see here. Here we go.
We're going to play dueling phones here and see who can get on the Misha website faster.
Okay. That sounds like a good plan. All righty. Here we go. Here we go. It's starting to load. Phones can be temperamental. We're both iPhone users. Let me see here. We have... Because I'm starting with the Poplar Bluff Lady Mules schedule, because I know they're going to have Notre Dame and the Donettes on here, because we played Notre Dame just a couple weeks ago.
Right.
I can tell you that Notre Dame is hosting the Donovan Donettes on January 20th on Martin Luther King Day.
Yeah, that's going to be a Monday night game. I will unfortunately not be sent to cover that, because we're going to let our colleagues at the Southeast Missouri and cover that, I'm sure. Some other notable games coming up for the Donettes. They'll be home on the 23rd to Neelyville. And again, Neelyville's a good team. They'll be looking to upset the Donettes there. Another really big game coming up on February 3rd. That'll be the girls from Jackson.
That's going to be a good one.
Yeah, Jackson is currently sitting at 8-1. And let's see, that is going to be a home game in Donovan. Please, please, please send me to cover that game.
That sounds like a good idea, Mark.
Yeah.
Put that on your schedule, dude.
And then they'll be playing the Lady Mules on February 28th, and that's going to be a home game. So, yeah, some particular dates, I would say, of course, Notre Dame, Neelyville, Jackson. Those are all going to be tough games. But, you know, the Donettes have proved to be, you know, tough and resilient. And as we said a couple of weeks ago, they're really determined to go as far as they can go in the playoffs this year. So I think they're going to be focused in all of those games.
Never going to be a dull moment. And that is our show for this week. I'm Mike Bueller.
I'm Mark Sanders.
And you have been listening to The Sports Desk with Mike, Mark, and Kyle.